We're holding on page 36 in Sota Osmen. Continuing darshaning the psukim from Parshas Shmos about the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, we're up to now when Moshe was born. The pasuk says, "Vatera osiki toim hu," that Yocheved saw that he was toim. So what does that mean? So what does that mean? Marashah says it can't mean he's good, as in like midas or whatever. You're not going to be able to tell that with a newborn baby. It can't mean good, as in beautiful, because then that wouldn't explain. The pasuk continues. Vatit spenei shloisha yirachim. He hid him for 3 months. And what if he was an ugly baby? She wouldn't have hit him. So we have to find some other meaning of toy. So Tanya, Rav Meir Omer Toiv Shmoi. Rav Meir says it means that his name was Toiv, meaning, like this, you know, a few psukim later, you have where Bas Paroi, where Basia gives him the name Moshe, and that's the name he's known by for the rest of his life, but nevertheless, his original name was Toiv. And in fact, the Medrash says that each of his immediate family members had a different name for him. The Medrash mentions there were like 10 different names for Moshe Rabbeinu, each one representing a different quality of his. So Rav Meir is saying his essential name was Toiv. And actually, Marashah says, you know, so you have like this, with Miriam and Aaron, Miriam is so-called Al-Shem bitterness, because when she was born is when the suffering of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim really intensified. That's when the really harsh part of the Shibud began and lasted for 86 years. Aaron's name, Marashah says, also has to do with the fact that they were throwing the babies into the Nile. Apparently, Marashah is understanding that Aaron is related to the word Yor. So therefore, like, their very names indicate whether the troubles that the Jewish people are going through, as opposed to Moshe was saying over here, well, she saw ki toiv hu, that in the name Toiv is very appropriate for him, because he's the one, through him, goodness and geula are going to come for the Jewish people. So that's one meaning of it. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Toviya Shmoy. Rabbi Yehuda says his name wasn't Toiv, but rather Toviya, with the Yud and the Hey of Hashem's name added to it. So in other words, not just that he's good, but that he has the goodness of Hashem. One interesting point in this that one of the Mephoshim makes is that the two opinions so far, whether Toiv or Toiviyah, may be arguing, was Moshe born with intrinsically good midas, or is it that he developed them over the years? Now, there's a thing, at the end of Kiddushin, at the end of his commentary on Mishnah's Kiddushin, that the Pharisee Yisrael brings a fascinating story, and very controversial story. The story, in a nutshell, is that a Goyish king of that period hears all about the exploits of Moshe and all the Nisim and everything, and he decides he wants his court painter to go and paint a portrait of Moshe, and then he's going to have his wise men analyze it to see where Moshe's strength lies. To make a long story short, the guy comes, Moshe sits for the portrait, he comes back, the wise men of this king look at it, and they say, this is the face of a murderer. And the king is about to have that artist executed. What do you mean? You obviously went and painted the wrong guy. Kitzur HaMaisi goes back. This is how the story goes. He goes back. He asks Moshe what's going on. And Moshe explains to him, you should know that B'derech HaTevai was born with that kind of midah, being a violent person. But over the years, I trained myself to use it for matters of Kedusha. And that's why I became what I became. So the Pharisee Yisrael brings a story. It's famously controversial. Is that in fact so? Can we say that about Moshe, that he was born with bad midas and then worked on them? Some rabbanim have said that it's disrespectful to talk about Moshe that way, and the story itself, where is the provenance of it? Maybe it comes from Goshen sources or something like that. In any case, so one of the Mephoshim actually says that the two opinions over here in the Gemara, as far as Moshe's name, may reflect this point, that is he Toiv intrinsically, or is it Toiviyah, that is in his goodness is by connecting himself to the Eidishtek? Anyway, the Gemara continues. Rav Nechemya Omer Hogun Hoyel Nevius. Rav Nechemya says another meaning of Vateira Oisek Kitoiv Hu. She saw that he's suitable to become a Navi. You have the various qualities that the Gemara mentions in a few places that a Navi is supposed to have. So she saw that he has the ability, to do that. She could see, Eitz Yosef explains, she could see in his mazel that he's going to be rich and chacham and strong and all the other qualities that the Gemara says in the Dorim and in some other places that are needed for a Navi. That's another meaning of Toiv Hu. Marashah points out it would have to be that if we say that it was a matter, now if we say like Eitz Yosef that she saw his mazel, then fine, she doesn't need to be a Nevi'ah for that. But otherwise, it would have to be that Miriam told her, because Miriam was a Nevi'ah, Yocheved was not. Acherim, and then Acherim say another meaning of Kitovu Nolad True Mohl. He was born already circumcised. So that means, in other words, after all, the Orla it means that the Yetzirah is connected to the person, and the Yetzirah is called Orl and Ra and a bunch of other derogatory names. That's why we need to remove the Orla to make a person perfect. So therefore, if he was born to begin with without an Orla, then he's Toiv even to begin with.
When Gerez was Geyer, how come then he gets the Yetzirah?
No, if I can't, we remove his Orla.
And then he gets the Yetzirah, like the Phoenicians.
Well, okay, I mean, yeah, but, yeah. I mean, he had a Yetzirah as a goy as well, just a different kind, but yeah. So that's another meaning that he was born Gemara. Tosfos, by the way, points out that, you know, the Gemara tells us that at the end of Hodias, a story where the mayor for a while was kicked out of the Beis Medrash and demoted from his position, and then when he regained it, they penalized him because he and Reb Nosson had conspired together to try to depose Reb Shimon Gamliel as Nafi. It's a whole long story over there. Anyway, from then on, they started calling the mayor Acherim, which is why you have throughout Shas, when you say Acherim, Omrim generally means Reb Mayor. But Tosfos points out, here we have a mayor and we have Acherim. So what's going on? So first Tosfos says maybe he's called Acherim whenever he's quoting something from his Rebbe. You know, Elisha ben Avuya was called Acher, so maybe any time he quotes from him, it's called Acherim. Tosfos doesn't really like that explanation, though. And they say, no, what it can mean is that, in other words, that he changed his mind. Sometimes it happens, a Chacham changes his mind and gives a different explanation. With that said, Tosfos elsewhere says maybe, in fact, that does show that not always is Acherim Remeir, sometimes it may be somebody else. Okay. The Chum say yet another thing. B'shoshan nolad Moshe, when Moshe was born, nismala kol abayis ora, the whole room became filled with light, which shows that he's going to be speaking with the Shekhinah face to face, and later on he's going to have, as a result of that, as we have at the end of Parashas Kisisa, where Moshe's face glowed with rays of Hashem's light. So now they have like a preview of that, of his face shining when he was born. And how do we know that? How do we know that Toiv means light? Hashem saw the light that is good, so we see that light can be called good, and therefore Vatero is a Kitovu means that he saw that light on his face.
This passage is used as an explanation to our story for Enkiv. He was born Molly Adam.
So that's the thing. So you have two or few different ways. Right, so that is right. So that's what I'm saying. The story about the painting is very controversial, and there are Gdolei Yisrael who said that story shouldn't have been printed, and the Tiferes Yisrael shouldn't have brought it. But yeah, the fact is that the fact is that, first of all, the Tiferes Yisrael is no Katla Kanya Bagma either, after all. You know, he's not just somebody we can ignore. But besides that, also, you know, again, maybe you have different opinions over here, and maybe at least the opinion that calls him Tovia is saying that there is a certain truth to that. The Maharal actually points out that each of these things is kind of adding to the previous one. First, we're saying he was Toiv in the sense that his body was perfect. Then we're saying, in addition, Toiv Yoshmo, that he has a connection with, that he has a connection already even when he was born with a Lakus. Then Reb Nechemiah is going beyond that. He has the ability to become a Navi. And Acherim say even that he was born Gemalot, representing that he's even higher than nature, because after all, the whole concept of Bris Milah is on the eighth day. Seven represents nature, and eight, the eighth day of Bris Milah, represents beyond nature. And then the last opinion, the Chachamim were saying that Nismala Kolabayis Kolo'ura, which represents an even higher level. So each one of them is adding something to the previous one about what Moshe's greatness is.
I don't understand what goal that means with the Bris.
It means that, in other words, normally a baby boy is born with an orla covering the end of the Eva, right? And then the moral has to cut it off. Sometimes you have a baby who's born, the skin doesn't reach the end of the Eva over there, and that means, in other words, he's born already circumcised. There's no orla, and so they have to do a tophis dambris. They have to prick him with a needle or a little corner of the knife or something and draw a little bit of blood. But in fact, Ion Yaakov points out it's brought in a medrash that Moshe was born on Shabbos. Now, Tofas Dam Bris you don't do on Shabbos. A regular Bris is Doicha Shabbos when it's on the eighth day. A Tofas Dam Bris not. So he's born without even needing anything, in effect. They're going to do a Tofas Dam Bris, but they're not going to do it on the eighth day as they usually would anyway. They have a famous cute Purim Torah verse that they say, you know, Moshe was born on Zayin Adar. That should mean that his bris came out on Yudalat Adar. So now when Yudalat Adar being Purim, do you do a bris milah before or after the Megillah reading? What would they have done then? and the answer, equally well a joke, is that the place was Mukaf Choymim, Mimos Yeshua Ben Nun, and therefore the Megillah is read the next day, the 15th anyway. But based on what Ion Yaakov is saying, anyway, the whole question as a serious thing never begins, because in fact, kept his bris, his bris, or the Hatrophas Dam bris wouldn't have taken place on Yudalani. Okay. Fine.
It's an old
Purim sort of joke, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Next, the pasuk goes on, Vatitzpineu Shloisha Yerochim. She hid him for 3 months. Now, why 3 months? Because the Mitzriim, they knew to count, as the Gemara is going to bring in a couple of lines, that the Mitzriim would have their children tell on the women when they were babies and when they're pregnant and whatever. So now the Mitzriim knew when Yecheved had been remarried, remarried Amram, as we learned yesterday. Amram made a big public spectacle of it. So they started counting from then. They figured that's when she became pregnant. Meanwhile, she was already pregnant from 3 months by that point, and that's how Yecheved was able to buy herself 3 months.
But when you said
it
had
Moshe Rabbeinu,
was before the
Gzeira
Pharaoh or not?
It was after the Gzeira, that's what we're saying. Pharaoh had already made the Gzeira, that all the babies should be thrown in the Nile, yeah.
So in other words, they got divorced,
and then sometime within that 3 months, they remarried, right? Right. Marsha brings actually that Rashi on Chumash learns differently. Rashi learns on Chumash that the reason why she had 3 months, that she bought herself 3 months' time, is because Moshe, instead of being born after a 9 month pregnancy, was born after 6 months and a couple of days, which the Gemara elsewhere mentions is the minimum length for a pregnancy. So in that case, that would also explain the 3 months. Marsha says that actually really brings from the Sefer Paneach Rosa that it's really both. The Mitzrayim are perfectly well aware that a baby can develop on that faster track of 6 months and be born during the 7th month. However, since she was divorced and remarried, they didn't realize that by that point it's 3 months, so the first they're going and snooping around to try to find Yecheved's baby is going to be 3 months after he was in fact born. So that's how she had herself 3 months. So the pasuk continues, V'lo yochla oid hatzafinoi. She couldn't hide him anymore, and therefore she had to put him in the basket. So the question is, why? V'amai titzpenei v'tezel. Why can't she continue hiding him? What happened after 3 months that she's not able to? He's already hidden someplace secret, so then let her continue hiding him. Well, the Mephoshim explained, part of the question can also be that fine, the Mitzriah might come snooping around, so fine, let her go into hiding someplace else with the baby, someplace out of town. Why does she need to go and do this very dangerous thing of putting him in a basket? So the answer is Ella. The problem was called Hecha B'Shami Mitzroy, the Mitzvah Yenuka. Wherever the Mitzriim had heard that a baby was born, Mamtu Yenuki, they would bring their own babies over there, Uma Avu Hosem, and they would make them cry over there. This way, the Jewish baby who's in hiding would hear the sound, and he would cry together. It's a natural thing. It's a natural instinct in children that when one of them is crying, then other children who hear him will start crying as well. So this way they use their own children to smoke out the Jewish children. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says later on by Kriyas Yamsuf, Echzu lanu shualim, grab for us the foxes. This is that Rashi explains a baskel saying to the waves of the Yamsuf, grab for us the foxes, shualim ptanim, the little foxes, mechablim krumim, who had been destroying the vineyard. So this refers to the young. Mitzri children who already at that age were being enlisted to find Jewish children and get them thrown into the Nile. The Medrash actually adds another detail as well. The Mitzri parents would train their kids to go to the bathhouses and observe when Jewish women would go over there to bathe and notice how far along they are in their pregnancies and then make a note of it and go report it to their parents so they know approximately when the mother will give birth and then they can send the soldiers there and so forth. So again, like even these little kids are willingly participating in all of this. Nowadays you have the same kind of thing in Gaza. You have, 80 years ago you had the same kind of thing in Germany. It's not a new thing, unfortunately, that goes to kids also. So the pasuk continues. In fact, Marsha brings, by the way, from the Medrash, that in the pasuk over there, shu'olim, the word shu'olim is written twice over there, and the first time it's written with a vav, and the second time without. In which case, the second time it can be read as though it said shu'olim, which means the waves of the sea. So therefore, Echzu lanu shu'olim, grab us the foxes. Who am I addressing those words to? Says Hashem, shu'olim, the waves of the sea. You go and grab those Mitzrim who showed themselves, even as children, to be such a shoyim, and drown them. Yeah. Okay. The pasuk continues about Yecheved with Mogad Moshe, that Tikach Loi Tevas Goyme, she took a basket of Goyme, which is a type of reeds. So the question is, Maishno Goyme, why is she using specifically reeds? Why doesn't she use a wooden box, for example? So the answer is, Amar Rav Elazar, from here we see that the tzaddikim, their money is more precious to them than their body. Meaning not, in other words, of course, your body is very important. It's given to you by the Eivishter and you work to save your life. You don't risk your life for a little bit of money. But in other words, Mephoshim explained, the point is that, obviously it doesn't mean, it means other things being equal, when you can accomplish the exact same thing with something cheaper or with something more expensive, then you're going to do it with something cheaper because the tzaddikim realize the importance of every little bit of money, because they come by it honestly and they realize how every bit of it can be used to serve the Eivishter. The Gemara mentions that elsewhere, for example, as far as Yaakov with the Pachim Ketanim, and you have several other examples of that in Jewish history. Ben Yoyada adds also, in other words, part of the idea is also that tzaddikim are willing to forego a little temporary discomfort in order to save money that they can use then for tzedakah or for other good things. So the same way, a wooden basket might be a little more comfortable, but a reed basket is comfortable enough, and therefore Yecheved figures that's good enough.
Yeah.
So that's one reason. V'chol kach lama, so why are the tzedikim? So why do the tzedikim take their money so seriously? L'fisha in poshtim yedeim the gezel, because they don't stretch out their hands to gezel. They're super careful not to take the slightest thing that doesn't belong to them, and therefore they understand the value of Yiddish gelt more than anybody else. Okay, that's one reason. Reb Shimon Nachmani says another reason, a practical reason. Dover rach, because the reeds are something soft. It'll more easily be able to withstand both the gentle and the harsh things. Meaning, in other words, it actually explains. You make, let's say, a basket out of wood. If it bangs into a rock, it could break apart. As opposed to reeds, they're just going to bounce back off the rock and then be flexible and then continue go sailing down the river and then not have a problem. So that's another reason for her to use goyme for this basket. Okay, the post continues about tachmer of a chemer of a zophis. She smeared it with clay and with tar. So, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, chemer b'fnim v'zefes mebachutz. She put clay on the inside and tar on the outside. So there had to be tar on the outside to make it waterproof. She couldn't put clay on the outside because then the clay would just dissolve in the water. But she didn't want to put tar on the inside as well. So that the tzaddik Moshe, baby Moshe, doesn't have to smell the bad smell of the tar. Now we usually understand that when we learn this as kids, we usually understand that it means the outside of the basket was coated with tar and the inside of the basket was coated with clay. Tosfos actually says another possibility. Both coatings are on the inside. The outside she left uncoated because that way it'll blend in among the reeds. The whole point is she doesn't want anybody to notice it. So if it's made out of reeds and she's putting it by the reeds near the river, then if it's not coated, it'll blend in very well. So both coatings, Tosfos learns, are on the inside. She did a coating of tar to make it waterproof, and then over that she smeared a coating of clay so that Moshe doesn't have to smell the bad smell. By Noach's Teva, we find it was coated with tar on the inside and on the outside. Now, he was also a tzaddik. Marsha points out the difference is you have the Teva, you have all the animals and all the everything with it, and therefore there's really no choice. It has to be made as strong as possible, and clay is just not going to stand up to that kind of use. Also, Marashal says another point as well. Here we're saying the Shechina was with Moshe Rabbeinu, as the Gemara is going to say soon, so it's not appropriate that there should be a bad smell over there. As opposed to by the Teva, the Shechina wasn't necessarily with them anyhow, so it doesn't matter so much if there's a bad smell. Rashi on the pasuk gives a different point. Rashi points out that the Teva is similar to what Marashal says, but not so much the fact that the Teva was so heavily laden with people and animals and whatnot, but you also have the boiling water of the marble, and you also have to, last for an entire year and so forth, so therefore there's really no choice but to make it as strong as possible, and that means coating with tar on the inside and the outside, and if that means that it smells bad, what can you do? Ben Yoyada makes another point about it as well, actually. He says, a difference could be Noach and everybody on the Teva are adults. If there's a bad smell, because first of all, he says two things. First of all, he says there can be different kinds of tar. There can be a kind that doesn't smell so bad. So Noach would have been able to get a hold of that. Yecheved may not have been able to get a hold of. She would have had to, the only one that she could get was the inferior quality stuff, which smells bad. So therefore, she wanted to reduce the smell. But second of all,
the tears to prepare.
He had 120 years to prepare, but yeah. Actually, Benny Ayotta says the vote is before the Mabel, everybody was rich, so therefore the Noyach could easily afford the good quality stuff, whereas Yecheved maybe not. But also, he says another point as well is that Noyach and everybody in the Teva being adults, so fine, if it smells bad, they can always take and they can always bring along perfumes and things like that to kill the bad smell. Moshe's a baby, he can't do anything himself, so therefore she had to do what she could to reduce the smell.
The only one that said Tzadik on the whole Chitas. You said that Tzadik, we call him Tzadik, but he's not said on the Chitas.
Okay. Noyach actually says Tzadik. Okay. The pasuk continues, Vatosan Basa Yelad, she placed the baby in the basket, Vatosan Basufa Sfasayur, and she placed it in the, suf, which literally, the one was going to explain what that means, by the edge of the river. There is, by the way, a very interesting vort on this from the Rogachover. Now, we know the Mitzriim worship the Nile, so that means it's an Avodah Zarah. That means on the face of it, you shouldn't be able to have Hanah from it. So therefore, the Rogachover explains, when Yecheved put the basket, she didn't actually put it in the river. She put it in the reeds next to the river. So that way, she's not actually using the Avodah Zarah object. But then, as the Gemara is going to go on to say in the next couple of lines, Basia, Bas Pare, came there to Tovel and to get rid of her attachment to Avodah Zarah. And with that, the Rogachover learns, with that, she was Mevatel, the power of Avodah Zarah of the river. Now, it's able to be used. Now, therefore, the basket floated into the river, and that's where Basia found it and then saved Moshe. Okay. So what is this word Basuf? Rabbi Lozo Omer Yamsuf. So Rabbi Lozo says it means that he was placed in the Yamsuf. So a couple of the Mephoshim point out, and Marsha and several of the other Mephoshim over here explain that apparently there's a branch of the Yamsuf that comes close enough to the Nile that therefore you could say she's putting him in the Suf. But it's still also Al-Sasiyur by the edge of the Nile, because there's some place where they come close enough together. Historically, there was actually a period, usually the Yam Suf is identified as the Red Sea. Historically, there was a period when they had a canal, that nowadays they have Suez Canal, but that goes a different route. But back then, they had a canal that at one point connected the Red Sea to the Nile. So in that case, that may be what these Mephoshim are referring to, that maybe she put Moshe in that area. And the idea would be, because the river is a fast-flowing river. She's afraid the basket might get lost, whereas the sea has a much more gentle current, so therefore the basket will stay put. So that's one meaning of Basuf. Rav Shmuel Menachmeni Omar, Agam. Rav Shmuel Menachmeni says it means she put him in a marsh, in a place where there's a bunch of reeds that Rashi describes, like willow trees and reeds and things like that growing near the water's edge. Kedichtiv, Kone Basuf Kamelu, as we see, a Pasuk describes in that Nevuah of Yeshaya that we were talking about yesterday, he describes how Mitzrayim is going to be defeated and destroyed, and he analogizes it, he says, the Kone and the Suf, various kinds of reeds and papyrus and whatnot that grow extensively in Mitzrayim, have dried up. So we see that Suf is one of those types of water plants, like reeds or bamboo or papyrus or what have you. The pasuk continues, Vatered bas pare luchlex ala yur, the daughter of Pare came to bathe on the yur. So what's this point, ala yur? If it just meant that she came to bathe, then they would have said that she came to bathe in the yur or something like that. So Amr Rav Yechon, Meshum Rav Shimon Yechoi, Malamet she yoda luchlex megilule beisavir. She came to cleanse and bathe herself from the idols of her father's house. She had decided to become a geyurus. So now she's going to wash herself of that, as we see, v'cheinu omer, as we see that tshuva and leaving and then abandoning one's previous averus can be described as bathing, v'cheinu omer, as you have another pasuk in Yeshaya, im rochatz Hashem es tzoyas v'noi tzion, when Hashem washes off the filth of the daughters of Tzion. So he's been talking about in the pasukim before that, the averus of the Jewish people and how they're going to be punished for it, and then he says eventually Hashem is going to come and kavyachol himself, like the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, like a mighty king who goes and personally washes off the filth of the baby, and it shows a tremendous ava. So the same way the Eved is personally going to wash off their filth. So we see, in other words, that doing tshuva is described in terms of washing. So in other words, Marsha says, it may actually mean that she's not literally going there to Tovel. We're just saying that her tshuva and her deciding to take on Judaism is considered, the pasuk is speaking of it in terms of bathing. Well, the Mephoshim explained that it means she actually Tovel. Listen, a Geodas has to actually Tovel. So in that case, then she literally Tovel in the river. So and the pasuk continues, "V'nar iseh holchos al yadayor," her maidens, her maid servants, her attendants, whatever, are walking next to the river. So the question is, why does it need to mention that point at all? And why does it also need to put it in the middle of the day? When it says that she went to bathe, the next, or however we explain Luchot, the next thing it should say is she saw the basket. Why is it important to interject that her attendants were walking next to the river? So therefore, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, ein halichazu ela loshen misa. The word walking over here means that they're going to their death. Because, as Rashi explains, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, they tried to talk her out of saving this baby. So therefore, Hashem sent a malach to strike him down. As we find, Esav says, "I'm going to die." So we said the word holach is associated with death. So now, in other words, the flow of the pasuk is, she went to bathe to cleanse herself of it, azara, by the river. Meanwhile, her maidens, her maidservants, are going over there to their death. Why? Because the next thing is, she sees the basket, and they're trying to talk her out of saving them. So the pasuk continues, "Vatera sateva b'seichasuf." She saw the basket among the reeds. So what happened was, given to Kachazu, to Kaboyalat, Sula Lamosha, they see that she wants to save this baby that she sees in the basket. Amrullah, they said to her, "Gvirtenu, our mistress, Minhogish Aloylam," the normal way it is in the world, "Melach Basav Adam goes Xera," when a human king makes Xera, "in Ein Kol Aloylam Akaimin Oysa," even fine, everybody else may ignore it, "Bonavub Nebesim Akaimin Oysa," surely his own children and his own household are going to at least keep his orders. You want to disobey your father's own orders? He said the babies should be thrown in the river, and you're going to go and save one? So Gavriel came and knocked them down to the ground, and thus they died. So they're this way, because they were trying to prevent her from saving baby Moshe, so therefore Hashem got them out of the picture. And in fact, Eitz Yosef says that's also the word. That's why when the pasuk says al yad hayor, al yad literally means next to, it can mean next to, but literally it means so to speak, like kind of because of the yor. So they fell down and they died because they fell on the bank of the yor.
Al yad,
yeah, al yad, yeah, he says, yeah, they literally fell by the side of the river and then they died, yeah. With that said, I think there are Mephoshim who explain that maybe it doesn't necessarily mean literally. I didn't have a chance to look it up, but I think the Maharal actually says that it doesn't necessarily have to mean literally that they die, but rather like they lost their influence with her. Many times we find in Torah that a person losing their level, their position they were before, can be described metaphorically as dying. We know, for example, a poor person is considered like dead, for example. So therefore, it can mean, in other words, that Hashem made that she's not paying the slightest attention to them. They have no importance in her eyes, and from their point of view, they might as well they're as good as dead then.
Can I say also that maybe the punishment that Hashem didn't want to have bad ways or whatever, so he made lose the job or he made lose the
So in other words, yeah, they deserve this for trying to talk her out of it, yeah. The pasuk continues, "Vakishlach as amosa vatikocheha." So she sent forth amosa and she took it. So what does the word amosa mean? Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah, they argue what this means. Pad omo yoda. One says the word amosa means her hand. She stretched out her hand and picked up the basket. And one says it means her maidservant, which, as the Gemara is going to explain, it means even if we say the maidservants were killed, it means she still had one left. Why the two opinions? Manda omer yoda dechtiv amasa. So the opinion that says that it was her hand says because it says the word amasa, the word ama can mean in some places in Tanakh means a hand. The very name of the measurement and ama is so called because of the length of a person's forearm. So therefore he says that, that's why it says amosa. In other words, because if it was her shivcha, it would have said shivchosa, it would have said narosa, or whatever, like we had before, v'nar isea hochos. So therefore, so if it's changing and says amosa, then it would mean her hand. Manda amosa shivchosa, the one that says that it was her maidservant, says midaloi ksiv yoda. The fact is, it doesn't say yoda, her hand. So therefore, so it would mean, so amosa is another word for a maidservant. Rashi actually points out on the pasuk that according to Pshuta Shomikra, it has to mean her maidservant, because Rashi points out that it's true they have the same letters, Aleph, Mem, Sof, He, can spell out either one, but if it means her arm, then it would have to be, it would have a patach under the Aleph, and the Mem would have a dogish in it. And even the pasuk, it doesn't. The Aleph has a chataf patach, and the Mem does not have a dogish. So there's no other way but to understand that, then it means Maloshan Oma, as in Oma, like in the word Oma Hevriya, and therefore it means her maidservant. So according to that, the idea that it was the hand would be a drosha. With that said, there are other Rishonim who also discuss this point, whether in Pshutosh or Mikra, maybe it can mean that. One possibility is there may have been, actually, sometimes we find differences in Masoda between different Gedolei Yisrael. There may have been a difference in Masoda, how this word is to be punctuated, whether in fact it's with a chataf patach and a mem rofo, whether it's with a patach and a mem with a dogish. Okay. So the question is, Amanda Amar Shifchasa, well, according to the opinion that it was her maidservant, Ha'amad Ba Gavriel V'chavtin V'karka, didn't we just say that Gavriel went and threw them down onto the ground? And the answer is the Shire Lachada. Even then, we would have to say that Gavriel left her one maidservant, Delav Oirachara, the Mas Malkal, make him Lachada. It's not Derecheretzik, that's just not proper protocol for a princess to be all by herself. She has to be accompanied by somebody. So therefore, there had to be one maidservant left. And according to that opinion, then we're saying that maidservant is the one that she sent to fetch the basket. So if we say that it was one maidservant, obviously we would have to say that one would be a trustworthy, as Yosef points out, we would have to say she must have been a good, relatively tzedekus one, and therefore she's not going to blab the secret. So the question is, Ulamanda Omer Yoda Lichtiv Yoda. Well, according to the opinion that it was her hand, that she stuck out of her hand, then why doesn't it say Yoda? Why, according to that opinion, does it use the word Amosa, which, fine, can mean a hand or an arm, but it's a bit of an unusual word? And the answer is Hokamash Malon. According to that opinion, it means that the Torah wants to tell us the Ishtarbuv Ishtarbuvi, that it's stretched out. This is, you know, everybody always talks about Basia's arm stretching out. This is where it comes from. Yeah. De Omer, as we learn elsewhere in a brisa, that we have several examples in Jewish history where Hashem caused something to get stretched out and elongated in order to make a nest. You find a similar kind of thing with the arm of the daughter of Paroi that was made to extend much longer than it would normally be. The original context of the Braise is talking about with Achashverosh's scepter. You have in the Gos Esther in Perakei when Esther comes over there and comes uninvited and Achashverosh sticks out his scepter and she touches it. So the Gemara in Megillah brings from the beginning of this Braise that Hashem made the scepter extend out the Derech Nes many amas, because she was very far away. The throne room is a big place and she's standing out in the courtyard. So Hashem made the scepter to extend all the way so that she could touch it and then she'd be safe. So the Medrash says here that's one example in Jewish history where Hashem stretched out something for a nest. And another example is the arm of Paroi's daughter, v'chenat ha'motzi, the shinui rishoyim. Another example you find as far as the teeth of the rishoyim, specifically Oid Melech HaBoshan. The Gemara tells us in Brachas, the whole story, where Oid picked up a huge mountain intending to throw it on the Jewish people and crush them, and then Hashem made that ants come and chew through the bottom of the mountain so it falls onto his head, like this, he's balancing on his head. So they come and chew through the middle of it, so now it falls down onto his head, and when he tries to pull it off, then his teeth become stretched out like tusks, and they go into the sides of the mountain, and now he can't pull it off his head, and now it's stuck there, and then Moshe was able to jump up and kill him. So the pasuk says, "Vayakor is the vesbana." The pasuk says that they, meaning the Jewish people under Moshe's leadership, killed him and his sons and his whole nation. And the Gemara says that specifically Moshe killed them with a blow of an axe. Yeah. So Shenema Shini Rishoyim Shibarta, as the pasuk says, as the pasuk praises Hashem, you broke the teeth of the Rishoyim. For Amar Shlokas, I'll take you Shibarta Ela Shirbavta. Don't read Shibarta, you broke them, but Shirbavta, you stretched them out. So we see that there was an example where to save the Jewish people, Hashem stretched out the teeth of the Rishoyim, and by the same token, then Hashem stretched out Basia's arm and so forth. There is a vort in it, actually. There is a vort on it from Chaim Shmulevitz, who says you don't have to say that it actually means literally that, in other words, if you were standing there, you would literally see her arms stretching out. What it means is, in other words, that the Eibush put it in her mind and then gave her the motivation to go to the ultimate effort to get that basket. She's not, no matter what it takes, she's gonna go and get it. So in other words, Hashem helped her out. She wanted to make every effort, and therefore Hashem helped her with that. Okay. The pasuk continues, "Vatiftach v'tirei was a yelad." So she opened up the basket and she saw him, the child. The question is, why does it have to say "vatirei hu"? "Vatirei mibarilei." She saw the child. What's the hu? That teaches us that she saw the Shekhinah together with him. If nothing else, in other words, she saw his face glowing, like we were talking about before. She's not necessarily she's not necessarily on the level yet to be seeing the Iyun Yaakov points out that first of all the baby is crying, so the Shekhinah is not going to be resting on him when he's crying and sad anyway. But besides that, also she's not necessarily of the level to be able to see the Shekhinah, but at least she sees his face glowing, like we said before. So she saw the Shekhinah with him. An interesting vert on that, actually, the Shekhinah is represented by the letters He and Vav of Hashem's name. You have Yud Kei, Vav Kei, and the Vav and the He represent, you have Yud Yichud Kud Shebrichu or Shekhinah. Kud Shebrichu is Zah, is Yud and He, and then Vav and He is actually Yud and He is Chochmah and Bina, Vav and He is Zah and Malchus, whatever. So then that's represented by the Shekhinah, that represents the Shekhinah. So she saw the Shekhinah with him.
Before
Baruch Shama, I know he's saying. Okay, the pasuk continues. Vehine nar boicha. The pasuk says that the nar was crying. Now, usually nar would imply an older. So, in other words, Rashi explains, by the way, that it means vatir ehu es hayelad. The word es sometimes means with. So vatir ehu, she saw it, the Shekhinah, es hayelad, together with the boy. Now, so then the pasuk says vehine nar boicha, that there's a boy crying, but the word nar usually means a bit older than a baby. Kordele Yelad, the Kordele Nar. So first we're calling him a Yelad, a little baby. Now we're calling him a Nar, which suggests that he's older. So what does that mean? Tona. So we learn in a Braisa, who Yelad, the Kordele Kanar, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says it means he was a baby, but his voice was already like the voice of an older child. He has a very strong, deep voice. That's Rabbi Yehuda. Omelet of Nehemiah. Nehemiah says, how could you say that? Imkena, Sisa, the Moshe Rabbeinu Baal Mum. The problem is, in effect, Moshe is a Baal Mum. Because, in other words, the Gemara elsewhere tells us that a Levi who has a deep, heavy voice like that is possible to sing in the Mishkan or the Beis Mikdash. So you're going to tell me that Moshe had that kind of voice that would make him possible for that? So that's one possibility. Marashah says differently that no, the problem is not because he's a Levi, but just the fact that it means he's different than the normal run of people, and that should be called a mum. So fine, Rabbi Yehuda is not really bothered by that because fine, fakir, the fact that he has such a loud, powerful, deep voice means that he has extra strength. So that's not a mum, on the contrary, but Nehemiah is considering it a mum. I once saw a vort, actually, that I don't remember the source, that she says, Miyalde he'ivrim zeh, she means actually the voice itself. You know why that voice is so strong and powerful? Because this is not just one individual kid who's crying. Through him, there's hundreds of thousands of Jewish children who are crying, and therefore you have a really loud sound over here. Anyway, so Rav Nechemia says no, so it doesn't mean that he had an extra powerful voice. There is, by the way, another medrash, there's a Yalkut Shimoni that says the Nar over here actually refers to Aaron. Here you have Miriam was waiting by the side and watching to see what's going to happen with Moshe. Meanwhile, little Aaron is, what, all 3 years old, and he's the poor little kid. He's nervous about what's going to happen with his baby brother, so he's crying and in fear of what's going to happen. Baal Turim says it? Yeah. Nar, but I think it comes from Yalkut Shimoni, yeah. Oh, really interesting. Okay. So anyway, so Rav Nechemia says Elam Malamed Shosse Loimei Chupas Neurim Beteva means that Yecheved made inside the basket over there a miniature chupa. The Omra, she says to herself, Shemalai Esko Lechupasei. I may not even be zoicha to see his chupa. I don't know whether that's going to happen. Is the basket going to sink? Is he going to be swept out to sea? She has no idea what's going to happen. So like this, in other words, let him have a chupa because this may be the only opportunity I have to see his chupa. So she gave up already. In other words, Marshall saying, like, she only Miriam at this point still has her amuna that everything is going to work out well. As Moses is going to say later on, she had the nevuah. This is going to be the baby who saves the Jewish people. Amram gave up. Yecheved had given up. Only Miriam still had her powerful amuna. Ben Yehoyada points out, in a way, Yecheved's premonition came true. Where did Moshe get? Moshe did live and eventually got married. But where did he get married? In Midian. So you're chaver. Taka wasn't around. So Taka didn't see his chuppah.
How old was he when he got
there? It doesn't say. Well, there's different opinions how old he was when he ran away from Mitzrayim, but. As far as I know, the most widely known possibility is that he married Sephora when he was 77, and then 3 years later, is when Hashem told him to go take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. Whatever the case, we talked about yesterday, Yocheved may still have been alive at the time. There's sources that say that she outlived Moshe, but the fact is she was in Mitzrayim, and Moshe is in Midian, so she Taka did not get to see his wedding after all. Interesting. So the Yalkut Shimoni brings that point that it was Aaron. Yeah. Okay. Young name Mashiach Gola. Tesvov here. So La'osav Lavoi, we're going to have the concept as the pasuk says Torah Me'iti Teitzei, and the Medrash Darshan's on it. Torah Chadosha Me'iti Teitzei. There's going to be a whole new dimension of Torah that's going to come out of from Hashem. So that means we're not just talking about a higher level. We're talking about a whole new level, a whole new dimension. And we have, and that means in the world also, the pasuk mentions in various places that there's going to be Shemayim Chadoshim Ba'oretz Chadosha, a new heaven, a new earth, because the Torah is the blueprint of the world. So if there's a new Torah, a new dimension of Torah, then automatically from that there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth. So that means also that I've talked about in the Sikha, it means that all of what we're doing to bring the Geula closer also has to be in a new way. Not just that we're adding something on top of what we did before to the Avodah. The new Avodah has to be a whole new kind of thing. The Chadosh and Mamash, as Rashi says, that's really a completely new thing, not just an intensification of what was before. Is it the Alter Rebbe's chiddush that the Geula depends on Asenu Avodah Asenu? I don't know. Right. I mean, I think there are things along those lines in earlier Midrashim, but maybe the Alter Rebbe is the first one to formulate it in those words. I don't know.
I don't know where I read. Even we don't. We don't finish, like, you know, all Tshuva or the whole entire world. Hashem will finish it up after the Geula.
So there's the idea of the Ita versus Sachishena. There's a certain defined time that Hashem has decided by which Mashiach is going to come, whether we're worthy of it or not. And then there's Sachishena, that whenever we finish Maaseinu Vavadaseinu, then Mashiach can come immediately. Going on with Halachas of Kiddush Levana. So when it comes of, you shouldn't do Kiddush Levana before Tisha B'Av. And also, when a person is an Ovo, Rachman al-Tzlan, also, unless his Avelis is going to end too late in the month, then he can do it during his Avelis. He says over here, if the Shiva is going to finish more than 10 days after the Molad, and again, you have the concern that there may be a few cloudy nights and not be able to, then he says, fine, then do Kiddush Levana. That person can do Kiddush Levana during his Avelis. The same thing, when a person is fasting, he should not do Kiddush Levana until he eats something. However, Motzi Yom Kippur is different, because Motzi Yom Kippur is not, Yom Kippur, after all, is not a fast for a sad thing or something. It's not like the Arbat Soymus or whatever. It's a happy thing. That the Eibishter forgave our Averis. So then we do Kiddush Levana right away on Motzi Yom Kippur, and we don't wait. We first wash Negovasa, but then we right away do Kiddush Levana before we go home and make Abdullah and break the fast. By the same token, and now also, you don't do Kiddush Levana on Friday night or on Yom Tov night, only B'Shas Adchak if the Zman is going to pass. But other than that, you shouldn't. One idea that's brought, because you have the question, yesh tchum in l'mayla ma'asara, or ain't tchum in l'mayla ma'asara, and therefore you have the question of whether the Shekhinah can come to be with us by Kiddush Levana, and come l'mayla ma'asara on Friday night or on Yom Tov night, so therefore we try to avoid the question.
Curse of your enemies.
Well, I don't think that has anything to do, but it could be. I don't know.